Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Dr. Homebrew. We are back here with Brian and Brian. We're going to be drinking some homebrew from a guy called Brian. So effectively, officially, this reinstates the Council of Brian's. I would like to call the meeting of the Council of Brian's to order.
I move that we reconsider the wisdom of this.
Well, that's movement flushed. I don't know.
Well, I don't know, it's not seconded. Stuff. It has to be flushed, right?
Oh, damn, that sucks.
Earlier, yeah.
Anyway, welcome, everybody. We do have a Czech lager from Brian Stevens here, who's hanging on the line. We also have, we're going to be doing a non-alcoholic to alcoholic beer comparison. I'll just leave it at that. We got a mass marketed beer. We're going to determine if the, we're going to check it out. It's going to be a good time. I'm excited about it. I like doing also, these little tastings. Yeah. It's going
to
be fun.
It happens to be a commercial example of a beer style. So
that's right. So it should be interesting. It should be a good time. I'm excited about that. But before we do all that, I want to thank Five Star Chemicals. Go to 5starchemicals.com. Learn about everything you need to clean and sanitize your beer, which is using, oddly enough, Five Star Chemicals like PBW and Star Sand, and having an effective cleaning regime. You can't just half-ass cleaning. Trust me, I still do it, and it never works out. So no. you can't. Absolutely not. That's like the one thing. You can maybe skimp on ingredients or, you know, whatever. Like, oh, maybe my yeast isn't fresh, or maybe my hops are from last year's harvest, or what. Like, none of that matters too much if you have bacteria and contaminants running wild in your fermentation. That's just the way it goes. So clean, sanitize, use Five Star Chemicals. They are the best on the market. They've been serving homebrewers for, I don't know, 15 years? Easily 10 years. Yeah, more than that, probably, right? So anyway, check them out. Five Star, they support the show, so you should support them. And it's a whole thing. And we just go in this big circle.
I'm in. Yeah, this cleaning and sanitizing thing sounds like fun.
It sounds like a hoot, man. Sounds like a hoot. Man, right before the show, so I've been having this like post-nasal drip for like 2 months. This is now Jamil's medical corner. I'm stealing it. And like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. It's very, very, it's annoying because it's like a dry cough. And then I'm clearing my throat constantly. And finally my doctor's like, okay, well, come in for a chest x-ray. I did all that. Everything's fine. So he's like, okay, get on like Claritin and Flonase for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, damn. So I'm like, oh shit. Okay. I have a show tonight. It's kind of bad. I need to hit the Flonase. And I just taste Flonase. I shouldn't have done it. I should have waited until after the show. So I don't know why. I don't know when are we going to be able to get a nasal spray that doesn't just taste like aspirin in the back of your throat. Yeah. Like, why can't it just taste better? I don't understand that.
Flonase is kind of like roses, though.
It's floral. Yes, it smells good, but it tastes like shit.
Yeah.
It's like bitter, so I'm washing it down with a hoppy refresher. Anyway. I just don't understand. And it doesn't seem like it's working, but whatever. Anyway.
It takes a little time.
Brian, what's going on, man? Welcome.
What's going on? Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, thanks for sending in beer. So a Czech lager, which is category 3A, Czech pale lager. Is this your first shot of Bruna? Any one of these? I mean, you know, Czech lager, lager in general, like, have you done this before?
Well, I brewed one before, and then this one I scaled down for a session beer competition. So this is the sort of the low ABV beer using the same recipe that I used for the, I think it was a Czech premium pale lager. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. The three, Well, yeah, 3B.
Yeah. So only the second time I've ever brewed a Czech, though.
It's weird how that works out, Cooper, isn't it?
Right?
Yeah. It's the second time you brewed a Czech. Okay, well, that's cool, man. So this is like a scale. It's like a small beer version of your other one.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool. How'd the other one do?
It had the same... Well, I don't want to say anything before hearing feedback and stuff like that, but
that's fair.
I want to hear. But yeah, I mean, I drank the keg, so
well,
it didn't go in the sink.
Yeah, but you know cool. what? And sometimes that works as like, oh, okay, I get it. It was pretty good, but like as homebrewers, that tends to fall on either side of that. Right? And it's like, well,
yeah,
it was bad. I mean, I drank the keg anyway because what else am I going to do? Or well, I drank the keg because it was really good. It doesn't really give me too much information, but that's okay. We'll get to it. We'll get to it later. It'll be fine. Why don't we start off with Brian Schaar?
Ah.
Why don't you take us down the road of the Czech lager for Mr. Stevens here, please.
That sounds awesome. So, Brian, I have to ask you the question that I always try to remember to ask. Are you in a homebrew club?
I am. I even decided to rep our hat today.
Oh, nice.
There you go. Close to the mic there. But yeah, Keepers of Craft. In Kalamazoo, Michigan.
In where, Michigan?
Kalamazoo. There really is a Kalamazoo. Nice. Bells. Yeah.
I've been to Kalamazoo once. It was a nice place. I like it. So thank you for plugging your pluggable there.
I just imagine Brian, like he just you remember like every single place you've ever been to in your entire, like you're one of those like odds.
I kind of do, but I also remember it because Bells was there. And some places I would just forget. But yeah, I went to Bell. Actually, I've been to Bell's twice and enjoyed it immensely both times.
Nice. They just sold.
Really?
Yeah, they sold to people who own New Belgium. So was it Lion or whatever? Huh. Yeah.
Kieran.
Kieran, yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess Larry was like, yeah, I'm retiring. I mean, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
He's earned it. Everybody has to retire sometime and everybody gets to enjoy some retirement, hopefully.
Agreed.
But cool. So yeah, thank you for sharing this, this Czech Pale Lager. We were discussing, right before the show, we can't call it a Czech Pils. It's a Czech Pale Lager 3A. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Aroma. I got a medium bready malt at the forefront. Not like people typically talk about bread crust being like dark crust or dark bread, but it was really more just like fresh artisan bread, like the bread itself.
Ooh, artisan.
Was kind of what I got. Yes. Yeah. Artisan. I'm hardly an artisan of bread, but I know where I can buy it.
All right.
So it just tasted it, that kind of doughy, slightly yeasty character. That's just so, so inviting. No hop aroma. And this is a sample I judged about 2 hours ago. It's warmed up quite a bit. I still don't really get any hop aroma out of it.
I see what you mean about the bready quality. It is like a fresh French bread, but not the sour tart way, but that. I guess like perfumey somehow the different recipes can sort of pull out different aromas of the same bread flour. I don't know what it is, right? And so I think it's like a moisture content thing also. But yeah, it's definitely like we just made some French rolls.
Exactly. Yeah, there's like a nice warm baguette just sitting there.
Yeah.
And I want to chow down on that while I'm drinking this beer.
Hell yeah.
I get like a little hint of caramel, maybe butterscotch, but it's so hard to distinguish. It's tiny, and I might be talking myself into it. And I think it's definitely not diacetyl. I think if it's anything, it's a little hint of caramel, which is nice. It gives a little bit of complexity. So 8 out of 12 on aroma. Appearance, 3 out of 3. This beer is crystal clear. It's got a low, persistent white head. And I did fill it up again. This head hasn't been sitting there for 2 hours, but still, it's pretty persistent. Pale gold in color. Flavor. Initially, the flavor is malty. It's not quite as bready as the aroma, but it's similar. Bitterness comes up pretty fast to balance. I get a little light caramel in the finish, just like there's a little very low caramel in the aroma. It's balanced and well attenuated. However, it is sort of lacking hop flavor, just like it was kind of lacking hop aroma. Finish is long and balanced between the malt and the bitterness. So give that 13 out of 20. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Medium low body. Carbonation is medium. There's no warming, no astringency. It's more creamy than not creamy. So it's definitely ticks the box for creaminess. Then overall impression, I gave it a 7 for a total of 36. I really like this beer a lot. It's very tasty, easy drinking. I could have a few of these. The only reason I didn't score it higher was just the hop flavor and hop aroma. You know, it needs to have a little bit, particularly a flavor. And maybe I'm just missing it somehow. And I'll be curious what Cooper has to say about that. But I think I would bump up the hops, the finishing hops, maybe a third to a half next time you brew this. Because everything else about this beer, to me, is really nice. It's really good. It's really easy drinking. It hits just about every mark you need to hit for this style, but for the hop aroma and the hop flavor. But thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I agree with you, Char. We'll see what Cooper says, and then I'll come in. But I know it's a weird day today. Cooper, go ahead, please.
Well, you're on that Flonase crap.
Yeah, I'm high as a motherfucker.
That's a good
dude.
Point. Yeah.
Flonase is a hell of a drug.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Okay. The bottle had a nice hiss when I opened it up. You know, properly labeled. As for competition, it's ready to go there. You know, good fill level. And the aroma, like, oddly to me, the first thing it opened up with is a medium low green pepper like spiciness, and it's pretty well in this sample. It's a little more subtle, I think, than I got last night. It kind of warmed up a little more last night when I first opened it. It had sat out for a little bit longer. It also has, you know, just low malt, lightly bready, no obvious esters. You know, seems to be well lagered. Faint herbal notes and hops, somewhat covered up by that other aroma in there. No DMS or diacetyl, no real sulfur noted here. You know, lager qualities seem pretty good with the low fruitiness there for the style. And generally light overall too. There's not a lot for the you know, for the beer to hide behind. So it's a delicate beer to start with. You know, maybe the kind of green pepper note I got is, might be a fine point. It's really not overwhelming, knock you upside the head or anything, but it is there for me. Appearance wise, it's a pretty pale golden color with a brilliant clarity, white head and mostly finer bubbles. Sticks around quite well. Had to give it full points for appearance. Flavor wise, again, in the flavor, I get a medium low kind of phenolic or something of this odd green pepper-like quality, kind of vegetal a little bit tasting, but not like the classic vegetal, like cooked corn or canned green beans or anything like that, or cabbage, celery, asparagus. It's just this, just a little bit green pepper-like. Low, lightly malty, low herbal hop. Seems to be lagered okay for the most part. No diacetyl or acetaldehyde poking out here. Doesn't seem to be a fermentation problem, really. It's bounced to the malt. Again, lightly peppery, faintly sweet in the finish, but it's mostly dry. Not very hoppy. I said that was a little low for the style. I kind of agree with Brian there. Mouthfeel wise, medium light bodied with medium carbonation, no warmth or obvious astringency. It's not creamy. You know, it's appropriate. But there's a little phenolic or whatever that is that's causing the chemical that is kind of causing that flavor bites just a little bit. It's not like a sharp hot pepper bite, but there's a little pepperiness to it. And it does give a little bit like, okay, that attacks the tongue a little bit more than this would. It doesn't seem like it's coming from bitterness. The bitterness is actually pretty low. Just maybe not quite as smooth as hoped with that. But overall, not too bad. In the end, it seems like a well-brewed beer for the most part. Good use of ingredients. Just this one odd quality pushing through, getting in the way of all else, in a pretty delicate style. Again, that is the green pepperiness. Normally, I would see this like coming from poor use of coffee or something, but I know there's no coffee in this beer. You know, perhaps from a darker malt or something, but there's just nothing dark or coffee in here. In this case, I thought, well, maybe it's coming from the you know, unintended wild yeast or something in there. I came across, and I haven't had this flavor standard, but 2-isobutyl-3-methoxypyrazine.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I got that I have that tattooed on my ribs, actually.
It's the
I got some of that in my kitchen.
It's the kind of the earthy standard slash light green pepper. It's a certified water. I'm on the Araxa website, a certified water flavor standard. You know, you can train professionals with it. It comes from contaminated water. It's formed by actinobacteria in lakes, reservoirs, and water distribution systems. It can occur in mixture with other methoxypyrazines, but I have little experience with that chemistry, but it's said to have kind of an earthiness and kind of a green pepper like quality. So my best guess is it might be something like that and something coming from the water. I'd love to hear how you treat the water and, you know, what you did with your yeast and stuff too, in case it could be a wild yeast thing, how you cared for that. The fermentation really does seem fine. But you know, just if you do have any issues with cleanliness of any transfer equipment, just watch contamination, check the valves, check replace the plastic, you know, anything that you're transferring with after the beer has been cooled, take careful control of the fermentation, ensure only the intended strain is taking hold. But I'm really kind of leaning towards that might not be it. I gave the beer a 29. It's a pretty subtle flaw. It's fair, I think, at the top end of good. It misses the mark, but has that minor flaw. You know, it's actually pretty close to style. It doesn't miss the mark on the style too much. It just has that somewhat, you know, very noticeable flaw to me in the flavor and the aroma. So I just had to take it down a little further. I could have probably been nice and gotten into the lower 30s, but I don't know. I like the beer, and I could, like you said, I could drink, you know, I drink from the keg, no problem. Have a couple pints. You kind of get used to it after a while. I was like, okay, that's interesting. It's, yeah, not really. It doesn't seem like it's intended. It wasn't declared as a green pepper beer, but
can you imagine?
So odd. Do you get that, Brian or JP?
Yeah, I get it for sure.
I don't really get it.
Okay.
Maybe it's just so subtle that I'm just somehow not detecting that. I keep going back both from the older sample that's been warmer quite a bit and the colder one, and I'm just not getting the green pepper.
Mm. It's just fresh green bell pepper to me, like in the nose. And it's, you know, it doesn't taste like stale, rotten, moldy green pepper. So that's good.
But it's always a plus.
I get it less in the nose and more in the flavor.
It does come out more in the flavor to me too. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Yeah. I didn't really notice it, Cooper, until you put a name on it. And then it's like, that's kind of all I can taste. It wasn't even there to me. I guess maybe I was confusing it with like a hop addition or something like that, where I was like letting it go. But that's just the nature of the tasting game. You know, once someone says something, it just either you pick up on it and that's all you key in on it, or you want to fight it. Like, it's
just the power of suggestion. This beer smells like socks.
It's hard. Yeah,
socks. It is socks.
Yeah. It's like,
what it is. But yeah, we've talked about that before on this show, and
it's a phenomenon.
It's incredibly suggestible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which is why we judge and then talk about it. But getting back to you, Char, I think what you were saying about the beer, where it needs a little hop addition thing, I would agree, because it does sort of finish creamy for me.
Yeah.
And again, it could be the flow. I don't know, but it doesn't finish as like crisp as I would like it to. I wonder if those green pepper notes, Cooper, are like a yeast phenol. I would be interested to learn about the yeast and what kind of yeast and, you know, that kind of thing. But, I mean, I guess it would have to be, right? Either it's a hop thing or a fermentation thing.
Most yeast phenols though, to me, that come across as like a, if they're peppery, it's like a harsh, like spiciness, or, you know, more towards kind of clove-like or, you know, plastic.
Because there's so many different yeasts out there now compared to even 5 years ago. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know anymore. I just sort of assume now.
If you get contamination with a Belgian yeast strain, it's going to be more like the white pepper, you know, the kind of actually kind of pleasant pepperiness, but not like I've never had one that kicks off green pepper like this.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think
the water. I'm going to say water.
Okay.
I'm real sensitive to phenol. And usually if there's a phenol issue, I'm like the first guy to be like, oh, there's phenols. And pepper tends to be in that family. But it's weird that I'm not picking that up when you guys are.
I'm not sure if this chemical is a phenol. It's a pyrazine, which I don't know. I'm not a chemist. I don't know what chemical family that's in, but it refers, the article here refers to other pyrazines as well that can be coexisting with this stuff. So I don't know. Interesting. I'd like to get a hold of that flavor standard and sample it in a light lager against the undosed beer and do that.
But yeah, I think I'd agree with everybody. It's a little creamy for me at the bottom, and I wish it was just a little crisper. But anyway, Brian,
maybe a little more bitterness, perhaps.
Yeah, I would go. I was gonna say 32, and then I thought about it more, and then I was like, I would probably throw it a 30. That's what I would do.
All right.
But anyway, Brian, tell us about this beer, man.
Yeah. So green pepper was the flavor I was looking for, and I can't really taste it either. But I brought it to my homebrew club. After I first made it, I'm like, yeah, you know, check out my new Czech pills. Like, I'm sorry, Czech pale lager.
How dare
and,
you?
And everybody picked it out right away. I thought people were messing with me. Like one person came up to me and they were like, you know, this tastes like green pepper. And I thought that the word like spread, you know, and other people were like, yeah, this beer has a lot of green pepper. But no, it was just individual people coming up to me and being like, green pepper, green pepper, green pepper. And I didn't really know where that would come from too, because like you, Brian, I thought coffee, you know, like old coffee or something.
There it is.
And so I was coffee. Like, well, you know what? I'll send it out to these guys and see maybe if they pick it out too and what happens. And I sent it to another competition too, and they called out green pepper, you know, just for the sake of having multiple people get a hold of it. And yeah,
they didn't have any inside info from your club members either. So we assume. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess let me tell you about the recipe. Water, like you said, I make my own RO water. I have an RO system and I just treat it myself. I've since brewed a Märzen with that same water and nothing like this in there.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem then. That's odd.
So I'm not sure. But yeah, we'll keep going. For brewing salts, really, really light. I think like 15 parts per million sulfite, 35 chloride, just almost nothing. For the grain, it's 87% Pilsner malt, 10% Carafoam, and 4% melanoidin. So some of those caramely flavors might be that melanoidin. That you're picking out in the boil, 1 ounce of saaz at 60, 1 ounce at 10, 2 ounces at 5, and then I actually whirlpooled with some saaz at the end too. Just like an ounce for 20 minutes at the end. Just I don't know why not. And it was fermented with a 3.5 liter decanted pitch of Imperial's Urkel yeast.
See what I mean?
Which I think is there, like,
there's so many weird fucking yeast out there, you never know what comes from what anymore.
It's I think it's they're like Pilsner Urkel yeast or something like that. So
Urkel.
That's funny.
The OG was 1040, fermented down to 1008. So it was somewhere right around 4%, I think. The mash was a single infusion at 148. So nothing special there. No decoction or anything like that. Fermented at 54 ish, give or take. My freezer likes to swing high and low sometimes.
Same.
But until roughly, you know, I'm not very scientific with my lager brewing. I wait for the bubbles to kind of slow down a little bit and then bring it up for a diacetyl rest. And so
who cares?
Rested that at 68 for a few days and then crashed it and kegged it. I drink everything fresh. I'm not much for like lagering. So I think I was drinking this after 14 days. And that's roughly when I brought it into the club and they started, you know, getting those flavors. So I was wondering if it might age out, you know, in the bottles that I sent you guys, but apparently not. So yeah, it's definitely there. I'm curious as to what it was.
Yeah. So yeah, how did you put enough calcium in your water? Did you get up to like 50 on that, or were you really low on that?
Let me look. It was probably at most 25.
Yeah. No, I'm just wondering if maybe your yeast was just a little stressed from just the extremely low mineral water and kicking out a little bit of a weird flavor there for some reason.
Okay.
Might be. The other beer didn't have a problem with it. I mean, different yeast, of course, but you know, I assume you used a different mineral profile for that. What was it? A Helles or whatever you brewed?
Yeah.
So, could just be minerals and yeast health really low mineral water. You want to at least get your calcium up to 50, I think, for this, even though it might say go lower, you know, the Czech know what makes their yeast happy. I'm sure they've been adjusting.
One thing too, now that you say that, I bank yeast. I freeze vials of yeast off. And so I think that the starter that I made with this was a frozen vial. So I started this up from maybe like 40, 50 billion cells into a starter and then pitched that again into the, you know, the beer itself. So maybe somewhere along the way, it wasn't the healthiest.
And yeah, if you're not sensitive to the smell too, you might have checked it as you would, I'm sure, and smelled okay, and in it goes. But yeah, that's it could be something. I would suspect maybe yeast, since you're using RO and building up. It's not like water. Oh, we got a guest here, the kitty cat. All right,
that's Sebastian. He wants to be on YouTube, I guess, and Facebook.
So yeah, but I've never tasted that flavor from yeast. It's so weird to me.
It is my gift to you now that you know it can happen.
We'll try to duplicate that. Yeah.
All right, Brian, anything else for the boys?
No, I sort of just kind of wanted to get that out there and see, you know, what you guys tasted. I really appreciate it. I'm glad that you did taste it. So, I have another path to search down. I'll have to go back and watch this video later so I can actually spell whatever chemical that was. But
yeah,
I'm sure Cooper will email it to you.
Yeah. It was meth something. So
please,
Google meth. How to make meth?
Yeah,
you won't be on any lists afterwards.
It was on Arox, AROXA.com. They have a bunch of flavor standards for sensory.
Cool.
But yeah, I've never used them. I don't know, but yeah. I don't know if Siebel has a similar one, but it says it's meant to be like the earthy / green peppery thing. So, something that can come up in beer. All kinds of weird things can come up in beer. I remember the first time I really tasted THP in a sour. It was actually on the show with Keith. And we're tasting a sour, but look at each other. It's like Cheerios on the end of the tongue, like on the end of the swallow after it dries off. Like, yep, that's THP, tetrahydropyridine. Weird stuff, man.
All right. Well, if that's it, Brian, we'll let you go, dude.
Cool, man. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
All right, everybody. Hang on.
Thanks for sharing, Brian.
We'll be right back. It's Dr. Homebrew. We're going to talk to, we're not talking to anybody. We're going to be drinking a non-alcoholic beer. So hang on. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the examination.
Hey, glad you hung out, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. It's non-alcoholic beer time, and I know I didn't really sell that well in the last segment, but I was trying to maintain some sort of like air of mystique and mystery, and I don't really need to because it's just fucking Heineken. But I'm sure you guys have seen the commercials or whatever. Heineken has a non-alcoholic version of their classic lager, which I really like. I mean, if you can get it fresh, it's, you know, great, or at least not skunked. There's a difference, I guess. I'm sure 6-month-old not skunked Heineken is still fine, but 2-week-old skunk Heineken is not going to be good. But Brian Cooper, you turned me on to Heineken Double Zero,
the 0.0 stuff. Yeah, it's the strong stuff. I've been sipping some of that lately, just because
You got to do it every once in a while, man. Yeah.
A little cleanse.
I think it's okay, honestly. I mean, we as like beer drinkers, especially like in our younger days, I don't know if you guys are anything like me, but it was like, oh, you can't, what are you, some kind of pussy? You can't handle, right. You know, come on, you got to come out and drink. And it's like, okay, I don't really want to, but I, you know, this is sort of an alternative to that because we all like the flavor of beer. And yes, you could argue that the taste of Heineken isn't desirable or sought after or whatever, but there are people who like it, obviously, because it's still on the market. I happen to like Heineken. I think it's a totally fine beer. I'll drink it probably over some craft beers.
Yeah, like back in the day, it would be one of the few beers you could get on an airplane that wasn't like Bud or Coors. You
right.
Know, it was like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, it's an international beer. And exactly. It would come in a can on the airplane instead of the bottle. So
exactly. Like, okay. So it's something that is totally fine. And I really feel like we should sort of drop the stigma about non-alcoholic beers either having no flavor or not being good or just like, why would you even drink that? It's like people who rail against people who drink decaf coffee. Like, just there's something for everybody. It's fine.
There's come, you know, there have become a lot of different brewers that are just doing solely non-alcoholic beers, you know, mm-hmm. Bravas and Athletic, mm-hmm. some of these. It just it's cropping up a lot more these days, and people want, you know, the beer, craft beer movement has pushed ABVs up sky high. There's been style creep where an IPA is now, you know, almost a 7% or just to start. And it doesn't need to be that way. You know, you should be able to have a 0% or 0.5% beverage that is equally tasty and has the hop character of an IPA or the clean, crisp character of a international pale lager. This is a 2A, you know, and just agreed. Is drinkable, gives you that feeling of I'm drinking a beer, I'm hanging out at, you know, like, but I'm not like wasting my evening getting sloppy.
I really think that that non-alcoholic craft beverages, right, craft beer, I know they're trying to do non-alcoholic wine, but it just doesn't really work the same way.
Yeah.
I think it'll be bigger than seltzer, hard seltzer. That's my prediction. There's a growing market for it. I mean, you listen back to that Athletic show that I did with the guys last month, I think. I mean, they hit their growth in just leaps and bounds. I mean, they were already expanding after a year to a brand new brewery, not even just adding a fermenter or two. Like, there's a right. huge demand for this kind of stuff. And the more that we can sort of normalize it and make it okay, it's fine. It's you know, it can only it's never it's not going to hurt anybody. It's only going to help, you know, it's only going to help the space. So as a craft brewer, yeah. You can make both kinds of beers. It's totally fine. But
that said, too, there's a lot of variation in the market, and there's some very good, you know, non-alcoholic craft beers, and there's some that are less
some that are not
desirable
good.
To me.
Yeah,
some
for
that
sure.
Aren't all that great.
But anyway, or, try them out. You know, there, yeah. It's good, man. You know, you start out with a non-alcoholic beer. I was playing golf on Sunday, and I brought like three non-alcoholic beers and two Coors Banquets, which you could argue that I brought five non-alcoholic beers. But yes. It, you know what? It's still surprising. Like you crack that beer, and you know, take a couple sips, and you sort of forget that it's a non-alcoholic beer. And I drank it, and at the end of the beer, I was like, "Oh, that hit me kind of. Oh yeah, wait, it's non-alcoholic." Your mind does something. You know, there was like this big study in Stanford years ago where they gave like 15 or 20 people, maybe it was 50 people, beer. Half of them got non-alcoholic beer and half got alcoholic beer, right? And then they studied how they were, you know, if they were aggressive or whatever, and then why they were aggressive. And even the people who got the non-alcoholic beer were aggressive and blamed it on the beer. Like, oh, I'm sorry, it's just the alcohol talking. Like, well, you got non-alcoholic beer. So, like, the psychology around non-alcoholic beer and the way it does affect you, even though you don't know it, is pretty funny. So, you have a non-alcoholic beer, you have a near beer.
Why don't we taste the canned version of the
so, yeah, zero, so we have a bottled version of 00, a canned version of 00, and then we have a bottled version full strength Heineken, and I can smell one of them. I don't know which one it is, but just already I can smell that classic skunky thing.
But
so
when I poured the can of 00, I smelled skunk, and not so much now that it's been sitting here for a couple of minutes.
Okay, so we're starting with can 00.
Yes.
Okay.
I opened the bottle 002 and I've got it on deck here. Yeah, pretty much the same color. Nice light, kind of light yellow straw.
And it's interesting, you know, because canned Heineken will forever taste different. And that's just the way it should be. That's the way life should be.
You know what I mean? I don't get any light struck character out of the can. It doesn't seem like it has that injected into it.
Not at all. There's a sweetness to it. You still get, I think, some of that earthy quality from the hops. There's kind of a
candy-like character to it.
Yes, and I think that might be from the non-alcoholic process. You know, when we're talking to athletic guys, they were like, well, we can't really tell you. I think Brewlosophy just had a whole thing on like how to do this, and it's with a lot of enzymes. So I have a feeling that maybe you're putting an enzyme to sort of blast the sugars out or the fermentable sugars and break them down so hard that the yeast won't get at them. I don't know. I didn't read it because it was, I don't know. It's an article. I had words.
You can go about it.
Yeah, it didn't have enough pictures for me.
You can distill the alcohol out of the beer and just save the rest.
Yeah,
the wash.
I want to try the bottle version though too.
Yeah,
because I'm curious about the skunkiness of the bottle version as well. You would theoretically there should be skunkiness, but I don't really get that classic Heineken skunky.
I get like if I'm kind of reaching for it, I get the skunk in the aroma. I definitely get some in the flavor in the bottle 00.
The bottle for me has a sharper flavor to it. It's a little more bitter, and so maybe that's skunk. These could be, I don't know, they could be entirely that. 6 months apart. I have no idea. Depends on how they're treated. Blah 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 blah. But all that aside, like it's a little more. Yeah, there's a little sharpness to it that I'm just going to attribute to like temperature change or whatever. But for the most part, they taste pretty much the same.
Yeah. My bottle expires June 2022. So, boy, they're keeping this around for a while.
Interesting. Wow, that's...
The bottle of the 00.
8 months out of here.
And the can is Best Buy May 2022, the can that I have. I know you guys had a different source.
Gravy.
We can compare. So yeah, they keep it around for quite a while, and that's fine. It's they create a pretty shelf stable product, and I'm sure they control our oxidation to almost nothing.
Yeah, our cans are June 2022. So
okay,
yeah, it's pretty much right there.
The touch fresher, but real similar. Yeah,
so what do you think about these beers as examples of the style? Does the non-alcoholic process changing that really at all?
It's got the thing that's missing in most non-alcoholic beers is the body, and it comes across as watery and light, and it doesn't have that same kind of refreshing, like beefy, like, okay, there's a little body here. Of course, there's no alcohol. You're not going to get any warmth or any, you know, any alcoholic flavors. But somehow, you know, maybe they can trick you a little bit. Maybe, I don't know how they process it. It's just like they have a method to remove the alcohol and get it actually all out of there. Most non-alcoholic beers contains less than 0.5. This is actually 0.0. There is no alcohol whatsoever in this stuff. It's completely
alcohol-free. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point because, you know, the other beers, the other craft beers that we've had, it's like, yeah, it's less than 0.5%.
Yeah, like a Klosthaler, it's going to have up to 0.5, and that's legal. You know, you're never going to get drunk from it. You drank 100 of them, you'd get sick. You'd have other problems and get sick before.
But so, how is it style-wise? What do you think?
You know, if you're looking at the 2B style, it's got a lot of the 2A International Pale Lager style. It's got a lot of those characteristics as a light maltiness, graininess, a little bit of a corny, you know. No, Heineken doesn't usually have kind of the corny. Some of them can have a little corny, sweet character. This is going to have more of a kind of a spicy, noble hop character maybe in the background, but pretty low, you know, low levels of yeast character. You can have a little bit of light apple fruitiness, but this doesn't usually have any kind of fruitiness.
No, it's a little bit like of sulfur, like a red apple, like inside, like flesh when I burp.
Yeah,
but I don't think that's terrible.
Yeah, it's not super fruity by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just, but it's also not.
There's a little apple.
Just malt or.
And yeah, it's warming up. I get a little red apple-y kind of thing.
I can see that. Yeah, it's not all just grainy malt, kind of crackery. Not too much bitterness, pretty low, just enough to kind of balance. They can get towards a little more bitter, some of them. Should be highly attenuated and well lagered without any real strong flavors. Just a smooth drinker.
That's what this is, man.
Highly carbonated. Generally, you serve these cold. I think on the bottle, they tell you what to serve it at, like between 40 and I'd have to look at it. But yeah.
Yeah, cold.
It's serve it cold.
Yeah.
It's not going to do any favors to drink it at English ale temperatures.
No.
But it's just a, it's a green bottle import beer. It's a typical, pilsner. Any skunkiness that comes usually from being light struck in the green bottle. It's just, I think we talked about this, JP. Heineken can come in brown bottles. I think in Europe, you see it. Do you see it in brown bottles over there more? And I didn't really seek it out over there. There's so many other good beers, but when they tried to introduce the brown bottle here, it was just like a failure because they wouldn't get skunked.
It's not the same flavors. Yeah.
No, that's not the beer I'm used to. But then the cans are always non-skunked, and people that like the can version must have a preference for the non-skunked.
I love the can. Anytime I can find this in a can, I'll get it, even if I don't feel like a Heineken because it's so rare.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, I got to do it. I have to do it for the culture. I really have to.
Right. So other beers that fit into this style would be like Asahi Super Dry, Birra Moretti, the Italian, Corona Extras.
I've never had one of those.
Lumped into here.
The Moretti beers? Mm-hmm. Never had it.
They're just nice and crisp like this too. I imagine. Easy drinker.
Yeah.
Remember the Full Sail Session Premium Lager?
Yep.
That was a similar thing. Red Stripe, Singha, that's one that you get sometimes, the Thai. But yeah, Heineken.
Okay, it fits the style still, even though it's non-alcoholic.
Well, now we haven't even really tasted the real Heineken. So
we're about to get to it, but I wanted to make sure that at least these are the adulterated versions, the changed versions, the bastardized versions are... It doesn't fundamentally change the style guidelines, I guess, if that's what I can get at. Like, it's still a category 2A. It's still this thing. It's not overly sweet or incredibly harsh or no flavor or doesn't drop out.
Well, the beers should be, they should be standard strength, like kind of typical lagers around 5%.
Yeah.
The ABV in the guidelines is 4.6 to 6. I think 6 would be an outlier, but.
I think that's totally 6 would be like an imperial international lager.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's taste the full strength stuff. It's a little darker, I think, than the double zeros. Not by much. Maybe one or two SRM points.
I get a little skunk, but not a lot.
No, out of the nose, like, yep. I feel like I'm in a seedy bar in San Francisco waiting for some shitty band to start playing. I'm
getting the skunkiness in this one for sure. But it's got that same kind of like, a little bit of a kind of an earthy quality to it. A little bit of.
God, it's so similar, but it's different.
Okay, here we go. This is the first time I've done this. I've been drinking the NA version for a long time, but I haven't bought a real Heineken.
Well, let's do it. Let's see what you got.
Until today. Like,
shoot that son of a bitch.
I don't remember the last time I had a real. Yeah. Woo.
Yeah.
The smell is really similar. Yeah, so the flavor has a little a sweetness to it.
It does. Yes, it does.
That's coming from the alcohol, I'm sure.
Yeah, and like a bigger mouth feel. A little bit
fuller.
Yes.
Yeah.
The presence sort of carries all the way through.
You can tell there's alcohol in there, but it's not extremely warming. But you can feel a little bit down the throat that a different feeling of the, it's a little less maybe refreshing with the alcohol.
Yeah, and again, it's challenging. Like the pure way to do this would be to find a Heineken in a can, so it's not skunked out of its fucking mind. And that's the hard part about these beers, is because the way that these beers, for me, the way that they skunk just fundamentally changes their entire flavor profile, and it just becomes harsh and kind of like maybe can focus the sweetness, but still gets obtuse and weird and pokey outy, and it's not ideal. You know what I mean? So it is hard to compare the two. However, there's a lot of similarities, but like you're saying, Cooper, it's for me, it's sweeter. It's a fuller bodied, you know, beer experience, which, I mean, you know, looking back, you go, well, yeah, no shit. Of course it's going to be, but it's good to know.
For sure. Yeah.
I'm just, we were just all curious about like, how do you take something as like as a staple as Heineken and pull all the alcohol out of it? Does it still taste like Heineken?
Yeah, because it is a crisp beer. You don't really almost notice the sweetness in it until you taste it next to the non-alcoholic version. When you taste this beer normally, it's like, that's a nice, dry, well-attenuated beer, grainy, kind of neutral, bready, crackery, you know, a little hint of malty sweetness, but, you know, and the NA versions have less of that. But yeah, the little spicy hop balancing the alcohol, it's enjoyable. Like the skunkiness is getting in the way a little bit, but it's not, this mine is not overpowering. It's just there.
You know, going back and drinking them all now, the Heineken in the can tastes as far away as you can get. And comparing the two bottles, they're not as dissimilar as the full strength and the double zero in the can.
Agreed.
Full strength, the two bottles are actually very similar. And I would imagine you would be hard pressed to tell the difference. Not side by side or in a triangle. I think you could probably pick this out. But if I gave you a Heineken, full strength ass Heineken, grown ass man Heineken, and then I gave you a double zero Heineken afterwards, I don't think you would be able to tell the difference.
So yeah, I gave and I won't name names, but a friend of mine who is a national ranked beer judge, and we're doing some judging together. I had been drinking some of the Heineken 00 after the last dry out cleanse, whatever you want to call it. I just kind of made it a habit to just have the 00 be the first beer of the night, and I'll switch to something alcoholic and drink it by the half pint. Just, yeah, you don't have to get crazy, you know. I like to come home and have a beer in the evening, but not six beers and get sloppy. So, I would do that. I came to enjoy it, and I poured some for him, not telling him what it was. I would just say, "Here, try this beer," and he tasted it. I was like, "Oh, like okay, that's pretty tasty." Like, what would you guess the alcohol is on this beer? And I say, "Oh, 2 to 3%, maybe 3%." Like, how about zero? Like, you know, I wasn't really trying to
got his ass. And then what did Dave Teckham say? I'm kidding.
Took away his beer judging license.
Yeah.
it's you know, it's not that much different. It's not that much different. Just a little sweetness. Really, you're not tasting a whole lot of alcohol in the Heineken. It's the main flavor components, especially in the bottle, are the slight skunkiness, the light maltiness, the dryness of the finish, and it's just easy drinking and smooth, and you just, you know, goes down real easy.
I am sort of surprised at the you know, how little of the skunky bits come through in the double zero. I mean, this full strength bottle is Best by August 2022, and I thought like the standard of shelf stability or shelf life was 6 months, but apparently not. I mean, that's August 22. What is that, 10 months away?
Yeah. Both of mine bottles are July 2022. So, yeah, they give it quite a shelf life.
They give it when do you think this beer was friggin' brewed? I mean, do you think it's a year shelf life?
It's brewed in Holland. It had to come over on a boat or what, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, last month, last week, or 4 months ago? I don't know.
Those beers I find in the grocery store were brewed 4 or 5 months ago, unless they're real big movers, you know, the Bud, the Coors, the whatever.
Yeah.
But like, you know, even craft brews that you think are popular, a lot of times you'll find them on the shelf, just the way the grocery stores buy them and store them and you know, stock in the back, move the stock out there to the shelves. You know, it sits for months oftentimes. You know, you get kegs from BevMo. They're 6 months old. A lot of times it's what
it is. Six is like, that's it. But eight is insane. But yeah, you know what I mean? And I wonder if the double zero just has sort of like less hop material in it. because there's less alcohol to balance out or whatever. And so maybe that's sort of contributing to the lack of that skunkiness.
I'm sure that they had a team of like really smart good tasters and smart people to craft something that tasted as much like regular Heineken as they could get it to taste like, and to be as shelf stable as the regular product.
I like it. To be honest with you, I sort of prefer it. I prefer the flavor, but again, the bottles out of the two bottles, those taste similar. Heineken in a can, 00, it's sort of its own thing. In shades of gray.
Okay, now I'm going to make a blend here. I'm going to do one third from the 00 can, one third from the alcohol bottle.
You're the king of the blends, Brian.
King of the blends. I'm king of the blends.
One third ish of the other bottle.
I just did half and half of the two bottles.
Okay, well that's fine. Should be a similar effect.
See, and that's the other thing you could do. You know, we talked, like Jamil talked about, like getting his shallow grave and like doing like a two thirds shallow grave carbonated water.
Oh, the watery grave.
Watery grave, right. Or whatever maybe it's a one third. Anyway, you could definitely do that with this stuff too. If you want to crack a couple Heinekens, you want a little bit of alcohol, just do a blend, baby.
Yeah, now I've divided it, you know, one third real beer in here, and now it's like a 1.66% ABV beer, you know.
You would never know. You would just never know it.
I would never know.
Because the flavors are still good. Anyway, I think we've beaten that horse to death, huh?
That's not beat horses.
I like
it. Is this a commercial calibration or a weird experiment? I'm glad you enjoyed it. I brought a can over. I brought him the homebrews that we're judging for this month, and we shared. I've been going non-alcoholic. I'm not going crazy. I like for the show. I'll have a beer for my club meeting. I had a beer.
Yeah, but, man.
You
got to do it every once in a while.
Thanksgiving will be the beginning of cutting loose a little bit with the regular beer. It was like when you switch back from taking a little cleanse. You do have to be careful and acclimate. It's a process. Like all of a sudden that 7% IPA that you used to drink two or three of in a sitting was like hits you after the one, and it's like, oh boy, hello.
Yeah, for sure. All right, hang on everyone. This is Dr. Homebrew. We're gonna wrap things up. We'll come right back, take a little breaky poo, and we'll see you on the other side. Hang on a second.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Wasn't so bad. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Homebrew wrapping things up with the Heineken Double Zero Challenge. The Heineken Challenge Areno. Yeah, it's cool, yeah. Man. It's good to have like new craft. It's good to have new non-alcoholic beer in this space because, like you were saying before the break, you know, I'm taking a little break here now and then too, and it's something to do, man. I don't know. It feels good. It feels good to be able to like have a beer and you know you're still good. And also, you get those cravings like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon or like 2. You're like, God, I really want a fucking beer, but I can't. Now you can have one.
Yeah,
it's fine.
You can. Yeah. You can operate like heavy machinery while drinking yes. it. Like,
here's the thing: since it's double zero, since it's alcohol free, can you drink that and drive?
I'm sure you could. The funny thing is, I went to buy some in the store, and I went through the checkout line in the the self checkout, and they're like, "Oh no, mm-hmm. no, that's a restricted item." I scanned it, it would say "call for attendant." They're like, "Oh, you can't buy that in this line." I'm like, it's alcohol free. There's no alcohol in this. It's zero.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't. It's, yes. it's a restricted product. You can't buy it in this lane.
Okay. Yeah, just buy the SKUs. It's funny because like I'll go to Total Wine and pick up my Hoppy Refresher. We literally buy these by the fucking caseload, dude. I go through them so much. But when I check out for curbside pickup, it says you have to be 21 years older and you have to show ID. And here's these people wheeling out these literally two cases of this, and they come and check my ID in my car. I'm like, you gotta be joking me. It literally says zero alcohol.
You're gonna get extra sober on that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, boy.
I don't know. Good stuff, man. And then Brian's Czech lager. That was good, too, man. Hopefully he can figure out where that pepper's coming from. I don't know. I think it's more yeasted than we think. Because I think that people are sort of like diving into these yeasts, these yeast companies, like, oh, we need a portfolio of yeast. We need to figure out what's going on. So let's figure out what goes deeper into the vault rather than just like, oh, well, this one performs best in this. It's like, well, let's go to this weird, funky one and we'll throw that out there. Not that Imperial yeast is doing that, but I don't know. I just think that sometimes that can happen.
It's probably the Urquell strain though, but it's just it was treated a little differently, and it was frozen, and it was, you know, grown up from a frozen slant or whatever. Oh, okay. You know, whatever it was, there were some issues there that we didn't delve too deeply into. But
yeah,
I hope he rebrews that, and because it seemed like a really interesting, nicely brewed beer otherwise, and
I like it.
Twist could be really really a winner.
Yeah, same, agreed. All right, well, we are going to get out of here, everybody. If you are listening live, hang on just a second. We have at least one more homebrew, maybe two. I don't know. We haven't really figured it out, to be honest with you. But we're going to be doing that, and that'll be great. If you aren't listening live, you can go back and listen to other shows until you have another one to listen to. I don't want to be able to tell you what to do. I'm not going to presume to control your life, you guys. Come on now. This is the internet, after all.
Want to send us beer? Email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. That's Brian with an I, the right spelling of the name, at thebrewingnetwork.com. Anything you want us to judge, we'll give you feedback on your flawed beer that you want to figure out what's going on with it. We'll help you try to win a competition you've been dying to beat your buddy at, or whatever it may be.
That's right.
Happy to help.
Or wine, or mead, or anything you ferment at home, send it in.
We'll take a hard seltzer if you got it.
Oh, hell yeah, for sure. All right, everyone. Thanks a lot for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you later.